Perimeter Institute. You don't have any more snore than you had the last time I was here, but I guess that's to be expected now. There's a sort of lot of results about probability of entanglement, but most of them show that in some sense, the probability of entanglement becomes very high when the dimension is sufficiently large. And I have put here a small selection of results, some by Sharek, some by Dervitz and Barnum, and then the aspects of generic entanglement paper, which shows that the dimension is sufficiently large, not only are you can construct subspaces that consist almost entirely of entangled states. But this past summer, Arvidsson, or what we'll discuss here, posted a paper showing that works for any dimension that if the rank is sufficiently small, then a state is almost surely entangled. And just for convenience, we'll assume that the dimension of HA is always larger than the dimension of HB. For the most part, that, and I'll write things in terms of HA. In that paper, Arvidsson showed that if the rank was less than 1/2 the rank of the smaller dimension, then the bipartite state was almost surely entangled. I claim a result that's stronger, that first of all, if the rank of the bipartite state is smaller than the dimension of the larger space, which you can think of the gamma A, then gamma is surely entangled. And this must be known because it's a very easy consequence of results that are certainly well known. But I don't know if anybody's written it down. And certainly, for some reason, when Arvidsson posted this result, nobody recognized it and realized that unless I've made a terrible mistake here, his result immediately follows because 1/2 the rank is certainly strictly smaller than the rank. And the interesting case, which is probably optimal, but that's not yet known, is if the rank of the bipartite state is equal to the rank of the density matrix with the larger rank, then gamma is almost surely entangled. And it turns out that this follows without too much work from results that were already known, first in the paper with Sharek and Werner, in which we characterized the extreme points of completely positive trace-preserving maps. And then a paper by with Michael Horodetsky and Peter Shore on entanglement breaking channels. So let me do the strictly smaller case and begin by assuming that the reduced density matrix is 1/d times the identity. Then if you use either the reduction criterion for separability, which you know picks a clever choice of a positive map and shows that that necessary condition is that the reduced density matrix gamma A tensor the identity is bigger than or equal to gamma AB, or the majorization criterion for separability that the eigenvalues of gamma A majorize those of gamma B, that a necessary condition for separability is that the largest eigenvalue, or the L infinity norm, of the reduced density matrix is bigger than or equal to the largest eigenvalue of gamma AB. But if the rank of gamma AB is smaller than dA, okay, then it has to have at least one eigenvalue strictly larger than 1/dA, okay? There's no way you can have a smaller number of non-zero eigenvalues. It's a density matrix adding up to one without at least one of them being bigger than dA. But for the special case I considered here, that's exactly the largest eigenvalue of the reduced density matrix. And so we have a contradiction. And so the bipartite state has to be entangled if it's, yes? Oh, thank you. Okay. Okay, so so using one of several well-known criteria for separability, we find that a necessary condition is that the largest eigenvalue of the bipartite state should be smaller, less than or equal to, the largest eigenvalue of either of its reduced density matrices. Okay? But now, if the rank of the bipartite state is smaller than dA, then you have strictly smaller than dA numbers adding up to 1. So at least one of those has to be bigger than 1 over dA. And now I'm assuming temporarily that the reduced density matrix is actually the maximally mixed state for which this is the largest eigenvalue or the infinity norm of gamma A. And so we have here clearly a contradiction. So if the rank of the bipartite state is strictly smaller than the rank of the reduced density matrix, okay, or actually in this case, the bipartite state is always entangled, surely entangled, not almost surely. Now I want to consider the general case where the rank is less than dA and gamma A has full rank, the same as the dimension. Then all we have to do is make a new density matrix, okay, gamma A to the minus 1/2, which we can do since it's assumed to have full rank on either side. And now if we take the partial trace here, we'll just end up with gamma A, and we'll end up with the identity 1 over dA. So we'll get back gamma A tilde, we'll be back to in this situation. On the other hand, this operation here does not in any way affect separability of a bipartite state. So the theorem extends to this situation if the rank of the bipartite state is strictly less than the dimension and the reduced density matrix has full rank, then it is entangled, surely. And one can more generally say that if the rank of gamma AB is less than the rank of one of its reduced density matrices, well, we could have just considered the range to be the Hilbert space in the first place, and then we have that gamma AB is in fact entangled. Okay? Not just almost surely, but surely. These two conditions are general separability conditions. Okay. The reduction criterion, I think one looks at the map trace rho, the identity minus rho, and then that's a completely positive map. And so if this is, I don't know, psi, no, this is a positivity preserving map. Positivity preserving, obviously, but it's not necessarily completely positive. And so if one looks at I tensor psi, if the state is separable, then this should be positive. And yes, letting that half of that map act on gamma AB gives you this condition. So these two conditions are general necessary conditions for separability. And they imply that a necessary condition for separability is that the largest eigenvalue of the bipartite state is less than or equal to the largest eigenvalue of one of its reduced density matrices. If you had a product state, this would be obvious, right? Because you would be multiplying by something smaller than one. But it doesn't have to be a product. These criteria say it's still true if something is separable. And what we use the maximally mixed comparison for is to get the contradiction, okay? When the rank is smaller than the dimension, then if they're going to add up to 1, at least one eigenvalue has to be bigger than 1 over d, okay? And in this particular case, for this particular choice, that is in fact the largest eigenvalue. Actually, all of the eigenvalues are 1 over d. So it's the contradiction that uses this. Just for simplicity of notation, I'm going to assume that dA is larger than dE.
But do you need that for this problem?
No, we don't need that. We don't need it any hop where it's just that by assuming that all the time and never needing it, I get the conclusion that I can use the larger dimension. Okay? And then once we have that, we can reduce the general case to the case of 1 over D of the maximally mixed state, where the reduced density matrix is the maximally mixed state. And unless I really did something horribly wrong, this seems to me correct and must surely be known. Has anyone seen this written down before?
Just saw it.
I mean, this part is at least written down in terms of entanglement breaking channels in the Horodetsky, Shore and Ruskott paper.
So this last line is it really is straightforward like that? I mean, there's no funny business that could happen on the.
I
can really cut it down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why not. But in any case, I mean, this is certainly still true. Okay. So, and of course, that would immediately imply Arvidsson's result. So now, the interesting case is then the case where the rank is equal to the dimension. And I will look first at bipartite qubit states, and I will remind you that a channel can not only be represented by its Choi matrix, but by an ordinary run-of-the-mill matrix in any basis, okay? So by numbers, TJK, which I get in the usual fashion by, you know, looking at phi acting on some basic element, taking the inner product. And so you get something like this, and the fact that it's trace preserving means that the first column has to be all zeros and ones. And using the Bloch sphere representation, I can write any row as 1 plus the sum over j of wj sigma j. Okay, so I'm using the same basis. So what you should think of is you should think of rho as corresponding to a vector 1, w1, w2, w3. Okay? And then phi acting on this is given by this matrix. Blah, 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 blah. And that's going to give you the representative of phi of rho, which will, because it's trace preserving, still have a 1, and then we'll have some other numbers there. Oh, this doesn't lift up. Oh, yes, it does. Okay. Okay. All right. So there are various, when you write it out in sigmas, it's this word. And it's easier if you could, of course, diagonalize this. Now, if I could diagonalize it completely, but then I would lose this nice 1-0-0 pattern for the trace preserving. And it turns out that all of these t's have to be real. And that's because the sigmas are self-adjoint. Okay, so if you look at this inner product, the t's will be real. And since they're real, we can apply the singular value decomposition using real orthogonal 3x3 matrices to this block capital T. And I use lambda, which we've always used it, but that's probably a mistake because these are really singular values, not eigenvalues, and we, in general, we let them be negative, although I'm not going to do that here.
Your indices are off though, right? I mean, you don't actually mean T21, 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 TE1.
That's this should be 3.
Yeah.
Okay, I caught this one and changed it, but I
didn't. Next column is T22.
Okay. Something went wrong when that's the problem with using find replace. Okay, but the indices are definitely off.
So you're just diagonalizing the 3x3.
I'm applying a singular value decomposition to the 3x3, absolutely. And of course, we know that real orthogonal matrices, 3x3s, are isomorphic with 2x2s, okay? And that actually corresponds to making basis changes on the input and output spaces. Okay, so the basis changes conjugate with U and U dagger. So I use the shorthand gamma 2 for that. And so that gives you a much simpler form.
Right. I see what you just said. You just mean that you're going to the representation of U as a unitary rotation on the qubit. U and V.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so before continuing, I'm going to give my a tirade on this because I'm showing you a value decomposition. So any m by n matrices, if you have any old matrix, everybody, A dag ray is self-adjoint. So that can be diagonalized in the usual fashion. Okay? And we define the absolute value of A to be the square root of that. That is the unitaries acting on the matrix which has, in the diagonal, I didn't bother writing it down, the diagonal matrix with square roots on the diagonal. And then you can figure out that if you define W as A absolute value inverse, say in the case where things are non-singular, and you check, you'll discover that it is in fact unitary or more generally partial isometry. And now if I substitute here, I can see that I can have essentially diagonalized, okay, with two different unitaries. You can always do this for any linear operator on a Hilbert space, any linear operator. A fact which I find that people in quantum, or at least some people in quantum information theory, find very hard to accept, despite the fact that they are enamored of the Schmidt decomposition. So what did Schmidt do? What Schmidt actually did, he was studying integral kernels. And he said, if I got a psi of two variables or two sets of variables, I can define an operator. And A acting on the function f of y maps it to a function of x by thinking of psi as, I put a complex conjugate here so that it's a linear operator acting on f, psi of x, y, f of y. That's what Schmidt did. And then he reinvented the singular value decomposition, which was known for matrices, and noticed that if you did that, oh, this should be a psi. That psi of x, y could be written as sum over k, some numbers, phi k of x, some other phi k of y, which kind of looks like what people write down for the Schmidt decomposition. But you can do that, and he did it for integral kernels. You can do it for anything. It was done earlier for matrices. And what people really use it in quantum information is for tensor products and act like it's some special mystical thing for tensor products. And actually, all you're used to doing with what people call the Schmidt decomposition is you use the fact that if you've got a tensor product, that's isomorphic to the bounded operators from Cn to Cm, where you just use the isomorphism if F tensor G is, you switch this ket to a Brun. And you define an operator, you extend by linearity, you do that, you get what people think of as the Schmidt decomposition for tensor products. You're simply using the singular value decomposition for operators when you make this correspondence. And you can also apply it to completely positive maps, which people don't usually do. But you can. It doesn't seem to me, generally speaking, to be very useful. Oh, there's an extra equal too. But one thing to remember in all of these cases, all of you doing with the, there are some situations when you have a Hermitian operator where you want to make the same basis change. The only difference with the singular value decomposition is that you have different basis changes on the input and output space. And in quantum information theory, you know, you've got some experimental apparatus, you may choose to write things in a particular basis, and it might be more convenient, but there's no a priori basis defined. So you can always diagonalize anything with different basis changes on the input and output spaces, which is a reasonable thing to do. Well, the unitary conjugations are certainly. Now, actually, what I'm using here is the fact that if you have a unitary matrix acting on a space, then it's equivalent to a unitary conjugation, which is not trivial. And here we've just got something actually it is because this comes because you first got, you take, you know, the adjoint of phi with it. So those are both completely positive max. Their composite is, and I'm pretty sure then their square root must be.
I agree with you
until that last. Well, taking the square root is in general not a CP operation, but in this case, after you've diagonalized it, it's not like, you know, it's not like square root is not a monotone operator function. Because here, the diagonalization, you've just got numbers multiplying matrices. Although, if you have smaller numbers, I guess I should think about that. But anyhow, up to this point, you can do it. I guess I said that because I had a paper where people were quite happy to diagonalize this map, but very unhappy to use the singular value decomposition. And I said, you know, what difference does it make? Because
I guess actually you could take the gamma u over to the other side. Right? So the absolute value of phi would be a composition of two CP maps.
Oh, yeah, because you can take the because you can do it with a different u on the other side. Okay. So that was just an aside because I use the singular value decomposition here to simplify my representation of a qubit map. And of course, you could instead use the Choi matrix, and you can work out what it is, and it turns out to be more convenient to work with the Choi matrix of the adjoint because these two blocks are diagonal. And to work out the CP conditions, you just notice, rewrite it in block form, that if you've got a matrix in block form, you can always write it as square root of A, 0, square root of B, I, X, and if A and B are invertible, you can write down what X is in terms of C, but you can always do this kind of factorization. And it's positive semi-definite if and only if X adjoint X is less than or equal to 1. And it's an extreme point and has rank less than or equal to 2 if and only if X is unitary. Now, it's easy to see that if X is unitary, the rank has to be less than or equal to 2 because you have 2 zero eigenvalues. I'm assuming that the underlying space is a qubit space, so you have two dimensions, so you have two linearly independent choice or even orthogonal choices for V here, which will give you two eigenvectors with eigenvalue 0. Okay. And so we worked out the conditions for rank 2 in detail. And it turns out if you apply this and say, what do you need for X to be unitary, the first thing you get is that T3 is equal to 0. And so we rewrote things in a permuted way. And let me just observe here that if T1 and T2 are 0, then the block form looks somewhat different. You get a block here and a block from the outer ones. But at least, given that these are 0, it's easy to see that if you accept this requirement, and without this, it's kind of messy, that in this case, you just need both of these blocks to be positive semi-definite. And here, like 1 minus x, use x instead of lambda, but that's OK. 1 minus this squared has to be bigger than or equal to this x1 plus or minus. And the plus comes from here, minus t3 squared. And the equality condition gives you that the rank is less than or equal to 2. Okay? So those are the necessary and sufficient conditions. And then it's an exercise in trigonometry to figure out that this condition is completely, having equality here is equivalent up to permutations of the matrix having this form. Cosine u, cosine v, the product, and then sine u, sine v. If this matrix here, that matrix here, and you see, if it's unitary, I know that I can actually demonstrate that you have at least 2 zero eigenvalues. Because if I'm working on a qubit space, I can have two linear, actually two orthogonal choices for V here. So I take one, I take another. So that gives me at least two orthogonal eigenvectors with eigenvalue zero. So if this is originally a 4 by 4, I've got the rank down to less than or equal to 2. And, okay. So then it's an exercise in trigonometry. Now, when we were interested in the extreme points, we said, well, U and B could be anything in minus pi to pi. And some of them, and this is a little bit different from the usual singular value decomposition, we also did it then, some of them will turn out to be negative. Okay? But for purposes of sort of putting a measure on the space and figuring out how many linearly independent. All right, what happened to the chalk? Oh, here it is. Okay. Eigenvalues and things I have. I want to eventually represent a CP map, a CPT map, by a pair of numbers U and V, small u and V, this is probably a very bad choice, and a pair of unitaries, capital U and capital V. Because I can't, if I want to look at the whole collection of CPT maps and, you know, compare the entanglement breaking subset, or equivalently the separable states and the set of all states, I can't just restrict myself to the ones that are diagonal. I have to look at all of them. Okay? So for this purpose, I just want to consider U and V in this rectangle. It goes from 0 to pi over 2. Okay, so this is the U axis, this is the V axis, pi over 2, and this is pi over 2 here. Okay, really like to, it's cool. Okay, now there are some familiar things. It turns out that we showed that the entanglement breaking qubit maps are precisely those which with either U or V equal to pi over 2. Then I'll have a 0 here and a 0 here. And basically it will simply map the block sphere to a shifted line. Okay, so those are that's a very we know exactly what the entanglement breaking channels are, and that's going to be the crux of the matter. Okay, we've got the entanglement breaking channels are going to be correspond to a line on a rectangle. Okay, and a line in a two-dimensional non-trivial two-dimensional space, a line has measure zero, and that's really the heart of the matter, but one has to be a little bit careful, and I'm not going to give you the details of constructing the measure because we're still working out the most elegant way to do it. But you, on the line U equal to V, that you might even recognize if U equals V, that's precisely the case of an amplitude damping channel. Okay? And the if you have U equal to V, you could do yes, if you do a rotation, wait a minute. Ooh. Well, maybe this is not a problem. At one point, I used a triangle because I could say we could switch U and V. But switch, oh, no, I mean, this is okay. Yeah, you need a rectangle rather than a triangle because if I just switch to, that's not a rotation. But if, U equals V. Ah, yes. If U equals V, then a rotation around the Z axis will not change anything. It's not just a question of being of switching them. Any rotation around the Z axis, okay, will basically reduce to a 2 by 2 rotation here, and that will not affect anything. If U equals 0, so that's the bottom line here. or V equals zero, that's a phase damping channel. And then we have a one here, so I have cosine B cosine V, and this would be zero, because sine of zero is one. That's a phase damping channel, and those will be invariant under rotations as respectively around the x and y axis in the block sphere. And of course, U equals V equals zero gives the identity rank one. So I have to be careful I'm not counting more channels than I have. And so there are some subtleties in the measure theory. But what I'd like to say is that these rank two CPT maps are isomorphic to this rectangle tensored with SU of two, SU of two. Now, actually, I've written SU of two, but there's an overall complex number that doesn't matter, so I really should be using factor out the complex numbers and fix the determinant or something. And the entanglement breaking subset is a subset of two lines. Okay. So put something here. And so then I'd like to say, okay, I'm going to use Lebesgue measure here and renormalize it so that it's one on this rectangle. And then the entanglement breaking channels being lines have measure zero. And I could put any old measure that I want on the SU of two. It doesn't have to be anything elegant like Haar measure. I can parameterize the rotations by three numbers or the 2x2 unitaries by three numbers. And it really doesn't matter. And say, okay, the separable states have measure zero. Now there are, you know, some technical issues because these lines are along these lines, the triple like this is not in one-to-one correspondence, it's in many-to-one correspondence. And might say, oh, but aren't you overcounting or something? But those lines also have measure zero. So they can't really cause a problem, but there are technical things that, which is why we haven't posted the paper yet. But I really need to get together with Elizabeth Werner and work out the technical details, measure theoretic details. But this is basically the crux of the matter. This is the hard, you know, okay. The separable states, we know exactly what they are. They correspond to the entanglement breaking channels, and they're aligned with respect to rectangles. And then we just have to take appropriate tensor products. The degradable channels.
Because it should be like half of them, right?
No.
For rank two?
No, for rank. Oh, for, yes, they, for rank you're right. They're either degradable or anti. Yes, you know, if you go back here, so the first paper. So it's a question of whether, it's simply a question of whether u, I think there's some inequality we had with cosine u is bigger than sine. One of, it depends on which one of these is, there was some inequality we had to divide them in half. But the curious thing is that when I was here, Graham was here, and we looked at this, and we realized that for the amplitude damping channels, we could prove that they were degradable. And then we discovered that Vittorio Giovannetti had already done that. And then we looked and we said, well, you know, if you multiply two of these together, you don't get something of the same type. So we said, okay, that clearly doesn't work. And then, you know, I was at this meeting and Michael Wolff said, I'm going to give a talk. We have this, you know, result about the extreme points are either degradable or anti-degradable. I said, nonsense. I already looked at that. It's wrong. And then we discussed. And so I went back and I worked it out. And I discovered that although in general, the product of two things of this type does not give you the same thing, for degradability, I think you need, when V is equal to U plus pi, anyhow, there's a very special result that you need. And it's exactly what, in that very, very special case, all the trigonometry works out. And we went back and reproved that, okay. So it's you know, there, but there's some inequality that divides it in half. Whether one is the upper and the other is lower triangle. It might be, or it might be a different, I'm not sure. I have to go back and check. Yeah. Actually, I think it's probably the anti-diagonal, because the anti-diagonal is the line, is the line V equals U. It's a U plus V equals pi over 2. So V equals pi over 2 minus U. And I think that there's some relationship like that that made the exactly what you needed to work out. Is my recollection. So I think it's actually a different division into two triangles. Okay. So I've written down once and for all what the real isomorphism is between the CPT maps. You have a delta excluding the lines you don't want, direct product with SU of 2 and SU of 2. And then you have to take the union with the line along the diagonal where you mod out RZ, and then the U equals, V equals 0. I guess this is the V equals 0 line, mod out RY and other. And I left off the identity because it's actually rank 1. And of course, that's a subset of the closure of this. But what you do is you put Lebesgue measure on the rectangle, and you use the product measure, and you do some technical things, and you get back to this basic result, that the entanglement breaking channels, you get 0 times something. It doesn't matter what it's times. Okay? And you could do that on each set, but it's more elegant to do it a different way. Okay. And now we want to move the restriction that the reduced density matrix is the maximally mixed state, which was the trace preserving condition. And we do just like before, except that I forgot, I think, a factor of 1 over D. So, and here I wanted now to get equivalence classes where the reduced density matrix gamma A is equal to rho. So I should have had, I think here, a dA before. Anyhow, you do the same trick as before, and you get, so you need to extend this to all possible. By doing this, you can now make an arbitrary bipartite qubit state correspond to a pair U, V, and a number X, which would be the eigenvector of the arbitrary density matrix between 0 and half, and another unitary transformation, say W, that diagonalizes this. And so we need to extend our previous sets, all of them, like this. And one should do something with the identity too. And so we simply extend the product measure. So I put M1, I made it 1/2 here. But again, the relation between the entanglement breaking channels and the regular ones still comes down to this line versus a rectangle here in the first step, and so you have still measure 0 up to some minor technicalities. So that takes care of that. Now, one other technical case is I would like to extend this to the case where the output is a two-dimensional subspace of CD. Okay, instead of just being a qubit, I'd like specifically, and you'll see why, and Arvidsson has a nice appendix in which he shows exactly that that is, has the structure of a real analytic manifold with a probability measure. So I want to replace one use of SU of 2 by this VD. And then we can do the general case. And so I can think of, it's just as easy now to think of bipartite states as completely positive maps. And a key lemma, which was originally proved by Pavel Horodetsky and a number of people, and then we reproduced, or we gave a different proof in the entanglement breaking paper with Horodetsky and Shore. But I noticed in going over it that there were a horrendous number of typos, so I'm going to put an appendix in the new paper. But it basically says, if you have a separable state, and it has rank dA, and its reduced density matrix also has rank dA, then it can be written as a convex combination of product states using at most dA products. Okay? If you think of it in terms of entanglement breaking, of maps, you know if it has rank dA, you have dA Krauss operators. And you also know that you can use, write any entanglement breaking channel using Krauss operators of rank 1, but in general you might need more to reduce it to rank 1. But this says in the case where both density matrices have exactly rank of dimension of the space, then you need exactly dA products. So as immediate corollary, I get that if gamma AB is separable and its reduced density matrix is the maximally mixed state, then I can write it as a sum of projections GK onto some orthonormal basis tensor psi K. And the fact that the reduced density matrix was 1 over dIA, if I just had an arbitrary set here, okay, then after taking the psi k can be anything. They don't have to be orthogonal or even linear dependent. They can, in fact, all be the same. That's just a completely noisy channel that maps everything onto the same thing. It's not very interesting. But this part here, when you have exactly the dimension GK can only equal the identity if you have an orthonormal basis. Okay? So GK has to be an orthonormal basis, and but the psi k's can be completely arbitrary. So now I want to, in this situation, rewrite the density matrix in block form. So it's, you know, this is I can just write it as block matrices, where each block P is the projection onto one of these sides. And what I want to do is take these first two, okay, and write them as Q and no longer require that it be block diagonal. So now I want to consider the general set of density matrices in which I replace this upper left corner by a 2D B by 2, so each of these are D by DB by DB matrices, by a matrix of double the size that's otherwise an arbitrary positive semi-definite matrix. Okay? Well, then it's pretty clear that this will be separable if and only if Q is, because it's otherwise by construction separable. And Q. And also require Q to the partial trace of Q to be I2, to be the sum of G1 and 2. So this is basically the qubit case we already studied. Okay, and except that rather than qubits, I could have the range be an arbitrary 2. I mean, I want to restrict the range to be the same as the range of P1 and P2. So it's two-dimensional. That would have been a better way to say it. So P1 and P2, so I look at the space spanned by psi1 and psi2, and now let this be an arbitrary block. Okay, that's exactly like the qubit case, except that I let my output be a subset of the DBD, you know, of a higher dimensional space, but one of a two-dimensional subspace. Okay? And so basically you go through all the same stuff. Okay, I wrote it differently here as a direct sum. But basically we still have this Q at the beginning, which is just like a pair of qubit situations. And we just need to put in more product measures, or change the product measures so they do things like, you know, change around the other GK and replace SU2 by SUN and things like that. But fundamentally, we're still starting with the same rectangle, and the separable subset are still lines which have measure zero. Now, of course, most density, most bipartite states in higher dimension do not have this very, very special direct sum form. But none of those which, or all of those which do not have this form, we know are entangled. Because I started by this lemma says that if we have a separable state, it has to have this form. Started out saying if it has a separable state, it has to have this form. And I mean, we have the GK. So what I maybe should have said in so far, we've so it has to have this form, and that's equivalent to this form, and that's a subset of the things of this form. And of course, I have to again remove, which I can do just like before, the condition that gamma A is maximally mixed in exactly the same way that, one did before. So anything that doesn't have this form up to some unitary transformations and, you know, some others, well, the other separable things really don't change. They just change the GKs, I guess. So up to some transformations, and again, using this trick, everything goes through as it did before. Parameterizing the row A's is a little bit trickier because you can't just use 0, 1, half. And when you have degeneracies, you have something tricky with the measures, just like on the lines. But again, there are sets of measure zero. So where I just had the 0, 1, half before, we have something more complicated, a little bit trickier. But basically, things still boil down to with, you know, possibly more complicated things that you're taking the direct product with and different measures. But you're still always starting out with a measure here that's 1 and the separable states corresponding to measure 0 here with this transfer product, and they end up being 0. And the question is this best possible? We know that although the full separable ball has been shown by the results of Barnum and Gervitz and Jarek people to get smaller and smaller relative when the dimension gets bigger and bigger, but it doesn't have zero measure ever. And so we know that it can't be true if the rank of the state is dA, dB. And I think it's probably false if the rank is just one more than the larger dimension. But we haven't proved that. And I guess one reason I think that, which is probably not a very good reason, if you go back to the unital qubit channels, which are, of course, even a more special case, you have this tetrahedron. And the ones of rank 3 unital qubit, well, rank 3 means 3 Krauss operators. So that means that you're on one of the faces. Okay, one of the faces of this triangle. And we also know what the entanglement breaking channels are. That you intersect this with its inversion through the center, and you get an octahedron. And on the faces, the entanglement breaking channels look exactly like this. And so in the very special case of unital qubit channels, they're exactly a quarter. And I have to think more about the general qubit case. But my guess is that this is really best possible. But at this stage, this is still a conjecture. And I'll stop there.
Okay,
yes.
Let me try and counter conjecture and advance a reason why that conjecture might be false.
we know the dimensions of subspaces of Hilbert space that contain only entangled states. So, and those subspaces are generically very large. So if you think if you think of the span of your quantum states as being a subspace of some dimension equal to the rank of the quantum state, and you want your measure to sweep out all possible spans for your states in a reasonably smooth way, you would expect that mixed states are of rank less than or equal to the dimensions at which subspaces are generically only entangled, to be themselves generically entangled.
I mean, but the thing is, if you only know the rank, that doesn't restrict you to those generic subspaces.
That's true.
It doesn't restrict you to those generic subspaces. I mean, the thing is, I mean, that argument would seem to say that it would be true in sufficiently large adventures for the full separable ball, but we know that that's not. I mean, you're saying
space contains point space. But if we restrict to a subspace of that Hilbert space of sufficiently small dimension,
right,
it will only contain entangled space. And I just conjecture that.
I see what you're saying, that for sufficiently large dimension, there could be a different interval. That's possible. I mean, I don't have a real.
Is it possible for there to be a measure for mixed quantum states such that at rank R, those states are not generically entangled, but subspaces of dimension R are generically entangled? That strikes me as inconsistent.
So the generic subspaces, that's true, if the generic subspaces, yeah, you could be.
I mean,
I think we can, I haven't worked out, I mean, I think it should be possible to work out, the qubit case, and that may preclude you from having a general theorem of the form BA plus 1, and it wouldn't mean that in sufficiently high dimensions. It would mean if there were a different theorem, it would have to be something other than BA plus 1. It would have to.
I suspect the qubit case is pretty.
The qubit
untypical.
Yes, I suspect the qubit case is also untypical. And in fact, my guess is that the qubits for rank 3 that. Generically, it's probably less than a quarter. The quarter is probably as big as it gets. The rank. So and given that as the higher dimensions things get smaller and smaller, this may in fact be the highest probability. The quarter might be the highest probability that you could ever have for any rank. But yeah, because I think it's also four. Let's see, if you have the octahedron, no, it's a half for rank 4 for qubits. So I suspect that you. So the separate for qubits, the octahedron, I believe, is exactly half the tetrahedron. So I think that's probably, but that's again the unital case. But I think that's probably, so you could probably even get an upper bound on the probability intuitively, at least by looking at the qubit case, probably atypical. But if this were true, it would preclude this being a theorem, but there might be some other theorem that would, you know, give you something bigger than strictly
yeah.
BA.
So my guess for the correct number, instead of DA plus 1, is DA times DB minus DA minus DB plus 1, I think, which is a lot larger.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, there could be some different formula that's true, but I don't think this is the right formula. But yeah, you're right. There could be something like that, and that would be an interesting question. Any other questions or comments?
Okay.